Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan of SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. And I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. Season 7, Episode 78. And Dave, once again, the New England Patriots are world champions, winning Super Bowl 51 in a game that I think it might be the most brutal loss I've ever seen. I mean, certainly with the stage and what's at stake, I think it qualifies. And I'm just trying to think of bad losses that the Steelers have had or other teams have had that where you kind of throw your hands up. But, man, 28-3 with a couple minutes left in the third quarter and mistakes all along the way. Not to take any credit away from New England. They obviously did everything right. But along with doing everything right, Atlanta did a lot of things wrong. I mean, this was unbelievable, and by the time he got to overtime, it just felt inevitable.
If you're a Steelers fan, this had to be the ultimate nightmare when watching a Super Bowl that the Steelers weren't involved in, I think. How do you have a team down 28-3, late in the third quarter like that? And essentially, rest in peace, Dennis Green said, that you let him off the hook. And you're right, you know, not to take anything away from the Patriots. I mean, if any team was probably going to accomplish what was accomplished Sunday night in Houston, it was probably going to be the New England Patriots. But immediately, David, it took me an hour plus. And after the game, I think, before I wanted to write the recap of the game, because I was still trying to wrap my brain all around it. And then I went back and watched it before I went to bed last night. And then I got up again early this morning and watched it once again and made sure to rewind a couple of parts of that second half there. Just unreal game.
So Dave, you know, the one thing just about it, and we'll talk some more about some of the specifics, but people wonder why, even when the Steelers win, I bring up clock management or situational football type stuff. And it was it was brutal watching Matt Ryan snap the ball with 17 or 19 seconds left. When they're up 28-10, and I realize, look, plenty of people are going to say, 90% of the time that stuff doesn't matter. Okay, they didn't win a Super Bowl, and that was a contributing factor. You saw some of the play calling by Kyle Shanahan, up late, Matt Ryan taking a sack when you're in a situation where you're in field goal range. They get a holding call in the next play. I mean, the list of things that they didn't do to make things easier for New England were crazy. And then they're out there for 90 snaps defensively. And again, Tom Brady drove his team down the field, and his guys kept running routes, and they kept making plays. And Brady was not good the first half. Let's be clear. I mean, he missed throws. He was sloppy. But, they played 60 minutes, and they played more than 60 minutes. They scored 5 straight possessions in the second half. They did what they had to do, and they went right down the field. And they obviously just eschewed the running game, which I thought against the Steelers would be the way it went. I thought they wouldn't be able to run the football at all, and I was worried they were going to be able to pass it, all day long, which obviously there was a lot of that. And this is what happened with the Falcons. And you just think about how do you stop a team like that? Well, you saw what it was in the first half. It was pressure on the quarterback, stop the running game, and they were able to make the plays defensively, and they did all the things they needed to do. And obviously they couldn't do it for long enough to get the win. And, man, if I'm Kyle Shanahan, I'm already in San Francisco. I'll tell you that. I'm not hanging around in Atlanta.
Yeah, I'm not taking that plane from Houston back to Atlanta. I'm going the opposite direction. I'm shaking a few hands, and I'm heading west. when you go back through and you try to slowly digest what had happened, and you know, I thought the Falcons' defensive game plan coming out was what, you know, Steeler fans wish they would have saw in the AFC Championship. You play some cover one with some robber. You know, you bring those cornerbacks up on the line, make it tough for them to get off the line. You got a four-man front that was able to put pressure on Brady, make him move off his spot, make him have some happy feet, hit him, put him on the ground several times. You could see that stuff starting to mess with Tom Brady's clock, I thought, because not only did some Patriot wide receivers have some drops, Brady missed on what, three or four throws, I think, in the first half there. So it was obviously working. Now, on the flip side of all that, and I think something that kind of wound up working in the Patriots' favor. How many total plays did the Patriots run in? Do you know how many total plays the Patriots ran in the first half as opposed to the Falcons? I've got it in front of me. I'm asking you.
I know the Falcons ran 19, which obviously you with the pick six they lost a possession. So. That's why I'm going to guess it's something like
42-19. Now, 42 plays in a first half for a defense. I mean, that's quite a few plays, right? I mean,
and particularly when you only put up 3 points.
Right, right. Now the Patriots.
The pick six drive must have been a 10 or 12 play. And Dave, I don't know, tell me, when they're kind of in that particular example, different people do different things. So, you know, there's obviously that drive where they had three straight holding penalties on third down. So do you think it's included? It's probably including the snaps that were penalized.
Well, here's the drive chart for New England for first half. 3 plays, 9 plays, both those ended in punts. A 5-play. Third drive, that was the drive that LeGarrette Blount fumbled on. Then a 3-play drive. So, you know, their first 4 possessions, the Patriots had 8, 9, 17, 20 plays in their first 4 possessions. And then they had the 12-play drive and then the 11-play drive. And you're asking if penalties count in the
snap totals.
In the drive totals, let's see here if they count those. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. No, they don't count those. It doesn't.
Okay, so the reality is the numbers are even higher if you're just thinking about, you know, how much energy was expended. I mean, they ran all those plays with the penalties, so.
Right, right. And then on those final 2 first half drives that the Patriots had, you know, 12 plays, 11 plays. Now, obviously, both of the Falcons' turnovers happened in Falcon territory, you know, as well. So, you know, they you want to talk about a team that shot themselves in the foot in the first half, it's the Patriots, right? And you know, we talk about those high number of plays in the first half, and you would probably think, okay, well, such a long halftime, Lady Gaga out there doing her thing, probably give you enough time to kind of recover, right? But, you know, I think we started to see, and here's the thing, after playing so much man, you know, or cover one in the first half, and I haven't charted this yet. I just going off of kind of what I saw. It looked like the Falcons laid back a little bit in the second half, played some cover 3 and some cover 6 in the second half, a lot of which we did not see in the first half. So why was that? And, you know, did that help lead to Tom Brady being able to do what he was able to do? And then, of course, the Falcons offense didn't help things out.
No, the Falcons offense didn't help things out, and they get, you know, and the thing is, they still made a couple plays. I mean, the Julio Jones catch was ridiculous, and it was a ridiculous throw. I don't know if it was a highly advised throw. I mean, Eric Rowe was in perfect position to make a play, but it ended up being a perfect throw and a great catch. And I just kept saying to myself, well, a first down, I must have said to myself 3 times, a first down will seal the game here. because then I assume they're kicking the field goal. Obviously, none of that happened. The sack is – it was a brutally bad play call by Shanahan on the play they got sacked. But third, at the same time
– third and one, right?
Third and one, and Matt Ryan has to know that you can't get sacked. I mean, you know, we talk about Ben getting sacked and hurt or getting hurt on that play where he's got to know that he can't take that hit against the Dolphins. This is a situation where, and it happened, you know, you watch the play and look, Matt Ryan does know. That's the point, is he knows it's just a player disengages from his lineman and is on him before he can do anything about it. But at the same time, you have to know that that's a possibility. And with that being a possibility, you have to be able to get rid of the football. I mean, if the Falcons had three more points, we wouldn't be having any of this conversation. If he doesn't take the sack there, or Shanahan doesn't call a pass play there, they're attempting a field goal, and it's a 45-yard field goal. There's not guarantees that you make it, but the odds are that you make it, and you most likely win the game. And oh man, I mean, there's just so many things. The missed extra point by Gostkowski didn't really end up hurting the Patriots. I didn't like sequentially how Belichick went for 2-point conversions because he left it down to the last play of the game where they had to get it with 50 seconds left, but they did. So, you know, congrats. You know, they executed when they had to execute. I didn't think the refs were a determining factor in the game. You know, the holding calls, the three consecutive holding calls. It turns out the Falcons get the pick six on that drive, so the impact they had was not necessarily noticeable on the scoreboard. I didn't think there were, look, we can always come up with a call or two that probably wasn't the right call, but I thought in overtime, unfortunately, the pass interference call on Martellus Bennett was probably the right call. I didn't see too many things that were too egregious from that respect.
I tell you, you boil this thing down to a couple of those possessions, later on in the game by the Falcons. What's amazing too is when you start putting pieces of this puzzle back together, and especially some that you pull out of the stat book, the game book, as far as, you know, the Falcons didn't have many long or hardly any possessions over what, like five plays. I mean, they either scored or and another thing that I really stopped tracking halfway through the game was the third down conversions, and the Patriots were 1 of 8 on third down. Ouch! I mean that
Patriots or the Falcons?
I mean the Falcons, 1 of 8 on third down, and
yeah, and they were killing it coming into that game at like 64% in the playoffs.
And when you look at the third and one call and when that happened, 8:31 left in the fourth quarter, third and one from the Falcons 36, okay, and you're up at that time 16 points, two possessions, and you have running backs that have averaged what, over 5 yards per carry. At that time, if there's anything that you want to do at that point is to eat clock, move the chains on a third and one, and then go from there. And why they drop back to pass, why you run. And I understand why when you look at the front, because look, Patriots thought they were going to run too, but you just such a brutal, brutal sack there. And then to make matters worse, he turns the football over. With a fumble, and then you give it to the Patriots right there at the Falcons 25-yard line. What, 5 or 6 plays later, they're in the end zone, 2-point conversion, and boom. And then you come back down the field again, and you get in a matter of what, 3 or 4 plays, you're well within field goal range. Sure, your first and 10 play from the Patriots 22 doesn't work out the way you want it to. It loses yardage. But why are you passing on 2nd and 11 with 3:56 left? And that sack there by Trey Flowers, oh, man, you could just feel what was coming. And then, you know, Matt Ryan looks like he gets some of the yardage back on 3rd and 23, only to have Jake Matthews be penalized for a holding call. And by the way, Jake Matthews had – outside of some nice early blocks, I thought maybe on some of those crack tosses, really had a brutal game. And then, you know, you're third and 33. You turn around, third and 33 on the Patriots, 45. Incomplete pass to Taylor Gabriel. And then the New York Times fourth down bot pops up on Twitter and says, I would punt here at fourth and 33. Yeah, you would. And you know, the rest is, to me, at that point, I've seen the movie enough times to know what happens.
Yeah, I'm just – the turnover was huge. That probably is getting less play than it should today. You know, you get that – you know, obviously Atlanta gets two turnovers of their own in the first half, and you can look and say, you know, that's the difference in the game. They get the points off them off both times, obviously. And the Patriots get it, and I just I don't know if I tweeted it or just thought it, but I just remember thinking, okay, that's exactly the play that keeps the Patriots in the game. That, you know, they had to have something like that. You know, and they got it and got it.
And here's the thing, you know, when you look at the Patriots, I mean, when you look at the Falcons early scores, you know, the ones off of turnovers, it wasn't like they got the football deep into Patriots into the field. You know, now obviously the pick six, that's nothing
that's
to do.
That's as good as it gets.
Yeah, I mean that's nothing to do with your offense. But I mean, their other one, you know, the Falcons had to drive the length of the field, and you know, I just think this was a classic example, I think, of a team, i.e. the Patriots, shooting themselves in the foot in the first half multiple times, and then going to the locker room and saying, "Look, everybody, bandage up. We are right where we are right now because of our own undoing. If we stop this right now and start playing our game, we can come back and win this." I mean, it was a classic, classic recoup, you know, and go from there, because they played virtually damn near perfect in the second half on both sides of the football. And of course, you know, you leave it to the Falcons to shoot themselves in the foot a couple of times there. Would any team but the Patriots be able to do that, David? Any current team in the NFL be able to recreate that? I know it's impossible to answer, but.
And maybe the Packers. I mean, you have to have a quarterback and you have to have a team that can move quickly and throw the ball every play. I mean, I know the Steelers can't move that quickly. I've never seen them do it, so they can't do it. I don't think they're capable of doing that.
Well, here's the thing. There were some times in that second half, David, where it looked like the Patriots didn't have urgency, right? But they stuck to their game plan. You know, sometimes running with LeGarrette Blount down, 25 points? I thought, my God, what, you know, and then really not hurrying up to the line. Go back and watch some of those possessions in that second half and you know, and see if it was just me. But I there were some moments where I said, man, where's the urgency? Are they just, you know, throwing their hands up here? But, you know, they pretty much kind of stuck to their game plan until really when they absolutely had to abandon it there in last couple possessions. But, you know, and I thought it was definitely evident in the last couple and including overtime there, that Falcons defense was just by that point out of gas. How many total plays did
92.
God, that's a college game, right?
Yeah. No, it was that was obviously – ton of time on the field.
They doubled the Falcons in plays run. I mean, that's just unreal. I mean, you hear it time and time again. How do you beat Tom Brady? Well, you keep the football away from him and you get pressure on him and knock him around a little bit, get him unsettled. Well, they damn sure didn't keep the football away from them, because I think the Patriots had it, 40-31? So I guess it was just one of those bound to happen type situations. You give him the ball enough times and he's gonna blister you. But I mean, one of eight on third downs for the Falcons. golly, that makes you grit your teeth. What happens if they convert just one of those in the second half?
That's it, just one.
I mean, unreal. They ran it, what, four times after being up 28-3? Is that right? Or in the fourth quarter? How many times did the Falcons run it in the fourth quarter? Four times?
I don't know. I don't know. Top of my head.
I mean, unreal.
What did Lady Gaga jump into on the end? Drop the mic, they throw a ball, and she jumps off a platform?
David, I got to be honest with you, David. I don't pay a lot. I don't pay attention.
You didn't watch Lady Gaga?
David, I was graduating high school. I was graduating high school when she was born. And that's just
high school. She's not that old.
Huh? I was graduating high school when she was born. Damn sure was. She was born in 86, I think. I read on Twitter. Of course, that's.
Yeah, I thought she was born in like 99 or something.
No, I think she was born in 86. So
she's not that old.
Huh?
I mean, she's older than I thought. Put it that way. Usually, it's a lot of these halftime shows. Well, anyway, the pop stars. But anyway, so I'm just reading here.
She's 30. She was born March 28, 1986.
The stat numbers on people watching the game, the Pittsburgh was the highest rated market per Mike Mulvihill of Fox Sports, 57.9, ahead of obviously any of the other. Buffalo was second at 57.2. Two teams, two cities that obviously you would think the answer is they hate the Patriots. Atlanta came in third at 57, and Boston was eighth at 54.3. Providence, obviously right next to Boston, was right there at 54.6. Interesting that, you know, Pittsburgh, number one on the overnight rating of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they want to watch the
but they hate the Patriots so much they'd rather watch the Patriots and lose even than the Steelers win, right?
Right. You know what? I hate to turn this into Patriots Depot and the Chat Ahead podcast, but they're so prepared, aren't they? The Patriots, they're just so.
Look, I mean,
you have a play prepared for the fake kneel down to end the first half, that kind of thing. It looked like when they lined up in for the 2-point conversions, they have the perfect play that they absolutely know is going to work and convert. It just seems like they're so drilled and dialed in for every situation possible and can convert in those situations when they absolutely must. It's sick.
Who comes out looking the worst on Atlanta's side? Kyle Shanahan, Matt Ryan, Dan Quinn, anyone in particular you think kind of wearing the goat horns?
Well, I think it's easy.
I mean, I'm giving it to Kyle Shanahan. But.
Yeah, I think it's easy because of the amount of – because the Patriots' offense scored the points to pin this on the defense and some changes maybe that they made and saying, oh, the defense let this one slip right through their hands. Well, you know, I guess technically it's true, but the Falcons' offense had – two times, you know, at least to put this game away where it doesn't matter, and they didn't do it. I mean, how do you drive to the Patriots 22 or 25 and come away with no points? I mean, it's just especially with an offense like that, you know, that's had the success that they've had all season. So I would tend to put more on it on the Falcons offense than I would the Falcons defense. You know, they were the reason they put the Falcons where they were a big part of why the Falcons were where they were in the first half. So I just view really them running out of gas in those final three possessions and probably, you know, not, that's why you probably saw less cover one and those type of things. If you're willing to play that kind of stuff against Tom and the Patriots, you better be able to be prepared to play it for the entire game. But you know, back to what you asked, and where does the blame fall? I put it more on. And look, I have never been shy about on Twitter and probably on this podcast multiple times in the last 7 years saying how much I'm just not a big fan of Kyle Shanahan. And I praised him a week or two ago saying, okay, I'm coming around, never been a big fan, but I have to admire what he's done. Well, last night was, and I don't know how much he calls the plays and how much Matt Ryan has the ability to change him and whatnot. But I tell you, I'm back to not being a huge Kyle Shanahan fan.
So that's what I was thinking about toward the end of the game is, you know, how does this impact how I view Kyle Shanahan? I mean, you know, I've mentioned this because it felt like it was just playing out from the beginning. The first time I saw the Falcons play was week three. It was the Thursday night game or Monday night, whichever it was, the first presidential debate was on, and I was with some people and chose to watch the game because it was a highly entertaining game, and I was just mesmerized by the Falcons' offense. And just watching them over the course of the year, everything was so good, and through the playoffs, that you know, I don't think it doesn't all get tarnished because he screwed it up in the fourth quarter. But he screwed it up in the fourth quarter pretty badly, and I think you know cost them the Super Bowl. So it didn't look like Matt Ryan was ever paying attention to the play clock. It didn't look like anybody said to him, "Look, you know, it's 28-3 here. We don't want to get away from our game." But we're not in any hurry. We want to be running the play. Look, you don't have to run the play clock down to one, but you need to run the play clock down to five. I mean, you know, you do that on five different plays, and it's a 15 to 20 second difference, and you've taken a minute or 2 minutes off the game. That, you know, that's the Patriots' last drive. I mean, that's what we're talking about. The Patriots are trying to score at the end of the game, and you had five, six, seven plays where you could have used 15 more seconds. And you know, that matters. And people, again, I'll just say it, you know, I know sometimes people get annoyed that we talk about it, or particularly when the Steelers win, that I'm bitching about the play calling process or the clock management process, but that's it. It's all about process. And if you haven't practiced getting the process right, you're more likely to make mistakes when the process really matters. And it really mattered, and it just didn't look like Matt Ryan was at all concerned, probably because he hasn't been all year long, about you know managing the clock down the stretch and using time, and it's a brutal loss. I mean, I felt no joy in watching last night, watching them lose like that. It wouldn't have been any joy watching them win 35-3 because that's just not entertaining. And so the game turned out to be tremendously entertaining down the stretch. But man, it is tough to watch a team lose a game like that.
You know, they did such a great job, and I think on that third quarter touchdown to Coleman, such a well designed play call. You know, matching him up against who was it, Ninkovic? Was that who was out there having to run with?
Yeah, he had no chance. He had Ninkovic.
I mean, you get a matchup, and that was a first and six play from the Patriots six, and then you dial back to that third and one. Pass play. If you're gonna call a pass, any in that situation, you got to my. You know, you have to have something very, very high percentage, I would think, in that situation there. And once again, the Falcons ran the ball just four times in the fourth quarter, and you can't tell me that a guy like Freeman can't get you. I'm willing to throw all my chips on the table that he can get me 1 yard regardless of the front. I mean, heck, if you have to run one of those crack tosses, I mean, it just seemed like the creativity from the fourth quarter on or the imagination, of the play calling just wasn't there at that point. You know, it's almost like they thought, okay, we got this. We just got to – go through the motions at that point. And I obviously know that wasn't the case, but I mean, it sure as hell seemed that way. And, I mean, just, you felt, who was that guy that choked, Greg Norman, of course, choked one time in, what was it, the Masters?
He had a huge six stroke lead to Nick Faldo, lost it to Faldo, I think. Yep.
Who was the other guy, the Frenchie?
John Valdeve.
You know,
I want to say Jean Valvin, but that's the play. But Jean Vandervelde.
You know, watching that's the type of thing. And you know, I'm okay with golf during the off season. I mean, I'll watch all the big tournaments. You know, I never miss, you know, Saturday, Sunday at the Masters, that kind of thing.
John Vandeveld, 1999 British Open.
Okay, that was the British Open. You know, watching, I remember watching that. That collapse, and it's something that it's a train wreck. You know, that you just can't take your eyes off of. And you know, I think if train wrecks would have watched last night's game, they wouldn't have been able to take their eyes off of that train wreck either. I mean, it was just, and once that sack happened, I thought even the first one, the fumble. Once the sack fumble happened, it was like, oh crap. You know, you could really feel what was coming at that point. And even at that time, the Falcons were up, you know, 16 points, and they're just so damn prepared, man. I mean, are we ever going to live long enough, David? I mean, you probably won't. Maybe some of our listeners will, to see a quarterback better than Tom Brady.
You know, look, I guess I think there are guys in the game today more talented. I think Aaron Rodgers is more talented, but I don't know how you argue, against Tom.
It's not all talent, though, right?
Right. I don't know how you argue against Tom Brady. I mean, it's, you know, he's got the right coach. I mean, how about if he had thrown an interception to Vic Beasley? How about if Vic Beasley catches that ball?
But he did.
How would that – I mean, can you imagine if that's what happened?
Yeah.
Patriots – that was in regulation, right? That wasn't even overtime, was it? Or was that overtime?
That was overtime, wasn't it?
Okay. So, I mean, if Vic Beasley's any other player, like if that's – if that's Timmons or Shazier, they're catching that. Beasley didn't look like he ever had a chance. He never even got his right hand up there. But his left hand, I mean, that was an awful throw. I mean, I would say a half is probably too many. But I would say, you know, a lot of guys in the NFL intercept that pass.
That was the play right before the walk-off touchdown by White.
Okay.
It was
a brutal throw.
You know, we talk about all these stats all the time and what needs to happen here and needs to happen there. And if this happens, X happens. The Falcons won the talk stat +2, David. And +2 in any ball game tells you 80% of the time you're going to win the game. Well, that obviously didn't happen. And of the Patriots, what did they have? How many explosive plays? 5 explosive plays. 3 of them came in the fourth quarter, and 2 of them came with 2:28 or less in the game with them. What about that catch by Julian Edelman? How long are we going to be forced to watch that?
Yeah, I mean, you know, Julio Jones' catch was a better catch than Edelman's catch. But,
and we'll never see that 5 years from now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Edelman, he got a good bounce. He reacted well. The kid Poole, you know, you wonder if Poole should have done better with it. But, you know, Poole knocks it. I mean, look, how about the play that Brady gets hit and Martellus Bennett catches it coming across the middle when it's a duck straight up in the air? I mean, in 80% of the time, that's picked off, and that might go the other way for a touchdown. I mean, can you imagine if that had happened? I mean, that is game over. That would have been back-to-back kind of picks on Brady. I mean, he got hit, and it just went straight up in the air. And you know, balls obviously bounced the Patriots' way later in that game. And if I'm trying to remember my sequences, I'm not getting them all right, but I think that was in the third quarter, wasn't it?
That Brady pass to Bennett?
Yeah.
Oh.
You know the one I'm talking about where he gets hit? And
I thought that was first quarter. Maybe I'm wrong. Let's see. He was targeted 6 times in the game.
It was right at the beginning of the third quarter, but, you know, like I said.
Yeah, I'm not remembering the sequence of when that happened.
Just watching it. Yeah.
What about all the? Do you think those holding penalties on the consecutive on the Falcons defense? Do you think that kind of played any? How big a role? I mean, obviously, you know, obviously they didn't kill them, right? Because they ended up getting a pick six later on in that drive. But do you think maybe all those holding calls maybe swayed the decision to play, maybe get away from a little bit? I tell you why they got away from, man, they figured, look, if we just sit back and play a little bit more cover three and cover six and don't get beat deep, we got this.
I think that's right. I think they probably, I do think there was a, and it would have been on my part too. You can give them the underneath stuff. Don't get beat for 20 yards. And they did. They got beat for too many plays, but they still got beat for, too many yards.
Yeah, don't get beat deep needs to have a hyphen with it. With don't get beat underneath deep. Is that right? Because
yeah,
how much yak was there later on there? And well, what do you think the steel? Who would? Oh, I was thinking about this. Also, last night I had a dream, David. That and I don't sleep much, and I don't dream much, and I don't remember many of my dreams. But I was playing offensive line for Bill Belichick, and I was asking him questions about my tape and why I would. If you saw me, you'd say, "Why the hell? There's no way you're gonna play offensive line." But anyway, regardless, I was thinking last night, trying to get myself to go to sleep. I'd ask you, who would you have most wanted to watch that game with last night? Mike Tomlin, Todd Haley, or Keith Butler?
None of the above.
Oh, come on. I mean, come on.
I don't know. I mean, what are you're assuming that they're going to have a good conversation with you and talk about
right, them? Right. Okay. Who would you most want to listen to a conversation about the game being a fly on the wall? Assuming that you're going to get some narration along the way.
Keith.
Huh?
Keith,
really?
Yeah.
I think I would have wanted to hear Todd Haley talk about what the Falcons were doing in the second half defensively, but
yeah, I'd still want to. Yeah, I did want to hear Keith talk about how slowing up, but either offense, the Falcons in the first half and the Pats in the second half, and what you can do. So
there'd be a lot of dad gums.
yeah.
Let's throw that out to our listeners there. Who would you have rather, assuming you get full-on narration to go along with it, who would you most of those three would have wanted to watch that game with top to bottom? Did the Steelers really learn anything from this game?
No. I mean, what are you going to learn? I mean,
right.
You got smoked by them yourself. Get better players, Do,
right.
Do different things differently? I don't know. But, no, I don't think – look, everybody – this isn't – the way the Patriots won, it wasn't something that they just invented out of out of the blue for that game. I mean, it's how they play all the time, and they just out-executed the other team. So, no, I don't think they learned anything.
Right. I don't think – that the thing is you just got to keep – you can't let your foot off the gas, and you got to keep doing what got you there and – obviously the Falcons offense, didn't finish the job, but defensively, I think you just got to you got to cut the head off the snake. I mean, even when it looks like it's dead, you better cut it off. And they didn't do that on both sides of the football. So yeah, I mean, it's not a magical, oh, look, it's just funny to actually, 2 weeks after seeing the Steelers play a lot of zone, you see the Falcons come out and do everything, mostly that the Twitterverse and the internet's all were hoping that they would have done, and then they have success with that kind of thing, and then you're like, oh well, that's how it's done, kind of moment, if you will. C.J. Goodwin made some plays in that first half, didn't he?
Yeah, made a couple plays. Good to see. Obviously, I think everybody knows by now he's the guy that. Went to Cal U, came to the Steelers last year, was on the practice squad as a wide receiver. Mel Blount was, famously or infamously the guy who pointed him out to the Steelers. But he's playing DB now for the Falcons and was involved.
And it was a couple of years ago, right? Because Goodwin spent his rookie season on the practice squad for most of, if not the whole year. And then he comes back to camp that second season, then doesn't make it, and then ends up in Atlanta the third season. That's the process, right? Wasn't it? Would a good one?
Yeah, it sounds right.
And, you know, there was I posted or wrote about it, I think, early in the off season about, you know, them going to him and asking him about switching to cornerback and all that stuff that goes along with it. And then I really followed him through the Falcons training camp this year and was watching all, you know, as much as I could of their games during the preseason, and then the news wire to, you know, make sure he's making all the cuts. And as soon as he made the 53 earlier this year, good for him. And you're glad to see, you know, unfortunate for the Steelers, they let a player like that, you know, fall through the cracks, but you know, that's going to happen from time to time. He's what? He's 27 years old. Just turned 27. CJ Goodwin.
All right. So, I didn't actually know who the MVP was, but okay. Brady's the MVP. I'm not really sure that there was a clear cut, other choice. James White, one of them. If the Falcons had won, I guess it would have been Matt Ryan, although Devonta Freeman would have had a argument. You know, hard to know exactly if it had gone the other way who would have been, but there were a lot of guys who played. You know, Freeman was outstanding. You wonder if he got enough touches, particularly in the second half.
You have to wonder Jarrett might have been up for MVP.
Jarrett, right. If they had done, what, he finished with 3 sacks, did he have?
Right.
Yeah, he was, and their line did, you know, that would have been the story. And I said, you know, I know I tweeted sometime in the second half, the most surprising thing is Atlanta's front is dominating. And you got to give some credit to New England's front, too. They dominated late in the game. So both defensive lines, which were seen as, you know, not particularly good and probably overmatched by the other team's offense, both played really well when they need, you know, at different points in the game. And obviously Atlanta early and New England late. The MVP, the league awards all came out, Dave. And I guess the only surprise for me was that, and it's not really a surprise, I mean, Dak Prescott got rookie of the year over Ezekiel Elliott. I kind of thought it would be Elliott, but I can't argue that it shouldn't have been Dak. So Ryan was MVP and offensive player of the year. Khalil Mack, maybe because team did a little bit better, got it over Aaron Donald as defensive player of the year. Everything else seemed to be as expected. Jordy Nelson was comeback player of the year. Anything to comment on about any of the stuff?
Whatever they call the Bridgestone play of the year. I don't want to take any away from that catch that Mike Evans had against the Falcons, but how can Antonio Brown's immaculate extension not be the play of the year, right?
I didn't see this. I don't even know what one or what. I don't even know what Mike Evans' catch was.
It was that one. Wasn't it a third? It was a Thursday night game, right? The one along the sideline, the one-handed catch that Mike Evans had against the Falcons. Well, that's the one that won the Bridgestone whatever play of the year, and. I mean, look, it was a fine catch, but how could – it wasn't as good and meaningful as Antonio Brown's catch and extension against look at all that. Go back and think what all was on the line there in that game against the Ravens late in the season. I mean, if he doesn't score there and the clock runs out and, there's an outside chance then if Baltimore.
Oh yeah, the Steelers aren't in the playoffs. Sure.
Right. So if you get a chance, go back and watch that play and tell me that I'm wrong, that Antonio Brown's play shouldn't have been better. But awards show, whatever.
Steelers fans, the mortgage process can sometimes be more challenging than beating the Patriots. Let our buddy Craig Oxen guide you through the sometimes daunting mortgage process to help you score the home of your dreams. Is next year's Super Bowl really in Minnesota? I cannot believe it.
Yeah, it is.
If you are considering buying or refinancing a home now or in the future, please give our sponsor, Craig Oxen, a call. He's an experienced, nationally recognized lender that can help you achieve the dream of home ownership. Call Craig Oxen today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. First Advantage Mortgage Company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. Minnesota, good gracious! You know that means the Steelers are probably going to get in because they've gotten the short stick a few of the times here.
what's the short stick about going to the Super Bowl?
Going to Detroit? Well, if you're not going, there's no short stick. But if you're actually physically going to Detroit or Minnesota is not exactly. It's not exactly the dream vacation.
What about having to go to Jacksonville with that Super Bowl they had there? You know, they ought to just keep this thing to like four or five cities and rotate it to hell.
I do know some people that went to Houston. Everybody said they did a bang-up job. And how about this? They had free food for the media all day, every day, and they had free booze for the media from 4 to 7 each day. Each day they had a free happy hour. So, you know, the media was in there just, you know, putting food in their pockets and drinking to their heart's content.
Are you a big Lady Gaga fan?
No, I was just making a joke.
Do you like her music? Do you listen to her music?
I would not know what I was listening to unless it was on the Super Bowl halftime show.
We never had this conversation. What do you listen to, David? You're a U2 guy, aren't you?
I don't mind U2. They're coming to Pittsburgh this summer. I'll probably try to go with my brother and some folks, but I don't put music on very often. I'm reading or have the television on or so.
You're one of those Violet Femmes or Pixies guys, right?
No, look, if my 15-year-old niece likes it, I probably like it. I'm a teenage girl. Give me pop. Yeah. She likes country, you know. But I like. I'm not married to anything. There's not many things I dislike.
I obviously know who Lady Gaga is, and you know, I'll listen to Howard Stern every now and again when I get some time. Listen to him the replays of his shows on Sirius and all. And I will say this: if you listen to her do that song a couple of years ago in what is it, Edge of Glory? Listen to her do that song. In his studio on the keyboard. I mean, that will make the hairs on your arm stand up and put, you know, goosebumps on the back of your neck there. But, I mean, outside of that, I'm still hoping for an Iron Maiden Super Bowl halftime show. But that's obviously never going to happen in my lifetime. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of pageantry and stuff like that. So, you know, I'm sitting there digging through the stat books and the play-by-play for the most part when these Super Bowl halftime shows are on. So, all right, shall we wrap up? How'd you like them apples there? the Patriots podcast here. I know we didn't talk any Steelers whatsoever. There really was, you know, no need to here. So, do you like the Steelers' chances next year?
Yeah, I think this is exactly the same as this year. The second best team in the AFC from where we sit today. I guess nobody's going to. So this is the whole thing, and I was laughing about this at the time. Everybody talking about Belichick trading Jamie Collins and the impact and what's he doing and all that. Well, now he's got another third round pick for this year. They've got a ton more draft picks. They made some trades that nobody talked about, like getting Van Noy and a few other guys at the trade deadline. And what the only thing people talk about is the big thing about Collins. And Collins now signs that extension. Good for Cleveland, by the way. I was very happy to see that. He signs a big deal with the Browns.
And don't forget, and when they acquired Michael Floyd, too, they sat him down for a couple of he was inactive for a couple of these – playoff games.
He's inactive for this game.
Right. He was inactive for the Super Bowl for sure. And, you know, now he's going to leave via free agency, and that'll factor probably into the compensatory draft picks for 2018. Jimmy Garoppolo, are they trading Jimmy?
Well, the Bears apparently are very – keen on getting Jimmy Garoppolo. And you have to think, you know, look, the Bears have, what, the third or fourth pick in the draft. I don't know if they get the third or fourth pick for him, but they certainly would get at least the 35th pick. I mean, you know, you're getting a Cleveland apparently is seriously interested, and they're picking around eight or they've got two picks. I think they got the 10th pick for the Carson Wentz trade. Maybe they have like the 10th pick. Garoppolo for the 10th pick. Do you make that deal?
If I'm who has the 10th?
Cleveland.
For Garoppolo, yeah, I strongly consider it. Damn sure do.
You do it for the Bears with the 3rd pick?
Yeah. Probably. David, if you don't have a quarterback, you're not winning, right?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I mean, obviously, you got to sign Garoppolo. You don't get him on his rookie deal. So do you immediately put him at $15 million if you trade for him? So that'll be the interesting thing. You know, we heard the conversations about, you know, Brady playing 3 to 5 more years in terms of the Patriots planning. And again, if you think Ben's 3 to 5 more years, which I've been arguing all along, you don't have to have the successor. So, like I said, I think the Steelers are going to draft a quarterback. I just hope they don't draft a quarterback in the first 3 rounds and make it more of a kind of developmental issue. But we'll get into all of that. What's our schedule going to be this week? We back Wednesday or we back Friday? What do you want to do?
Let's come back Friday. Let's catch our breath a little bit, because I mean, what are we going to talk about in the next few days? More Super Bowl, and I think listeners after this will have drank enough bleach by that point to help get it out of the system. So let's come back on Friday and start talking, you know, more off season and salary cap and all like that stuff, because I just can't see if something happens between now and Wednesday, David.
Yeah, all good. Yeah, we'll take a breather. Season over, we'll wrap it up, and we'll be back with you Friday. So.
All right, as always, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know on some of the thoughts on the Super Bowl, you know, and what we talked about as well. If you want to donate to the show, go to SteelersDepot.com, and you can find that donate button at the top navigational bar. Thank you for all the retweets and following along with me on Twitter during the Super Bowl. That was fun. Next year, I hope we're covering the Steelers during the Super Bowl as well. David, thanks for your hard work this season as well, and I guess we start moving hard and heavy into 2017 now.
Yeah, and one more time, mortgage rates currently at or near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, contact our buddy Craig Oxane at First Advantage Mortgage, a lifelong Steeler fan and Pittsburgh native. Craig's nationally recognized lender. Love the opportunity to help out our podcast listeners. You can call Craig today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at blackandgoldlending.com. Apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.